This call is being recorded.
Okay, let's get started. We'll see if Lorenzo joins us a bit later.
Okay. So do we start or do you guys have something to discuss before that?
No, we can start straight with the report of the Google Summer of Code. So jump into it.
Okay. So is my screen being shared right now?
Give me a sec. No, I don't see a screen.
Okay, I'll just share it again. How about now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll get started. So again, hi everyone. I've been working with Lorenzo on building something known as Hydrus, which is basically a generic server that we wanted to make to use a Hydra API document REST API. So this is a little summary of what Hydrus can do and what are the main things, components that Hydrus is composed of. So I'll get started. So basically, Lorenzo came up with as Hydra. Basically, it's supposed to be a generic server APIs using just the Hydra API documentation. So some of the features that Hydrus has is it has a very simple API to create a server, right? We use basic triples to store the things. And our backend storage is very flexible, so we used SQL as the backend storage that was built into Flask. We used the original SQL Alchemy, and so it has a wide variety of relational databases. And since that we used the main framework that we use, so any server application that uses Flask apps can be used with Hydrus as well. Right, and we created some scripts and some tools so that it can help people set up servers easily. Okay, so so basically this is what the objective of Hydra is. We have to take an API documentation, parse the API documentation, get the classes, properties, and collections, and then we have to create endpoints for these classes, properties, and collections, and these endpoints that are specified in the API documentation. So how did we go about doing this? Basically, these are the main components that Hydrus had. Alchemy backend, right? We added parsers for RD vocabularies also. What it basically does is, when we started with Hydrus, we didn't have an actual API documentation, right? So what we did was, we had a few RDF vocabularies that was there for the spacecraft and the subsystems ontologies. And we use those and we created API documentation. So those are still available in Hydrus if you want to use it. Then we have helper tools to add metadata. Basically, when you pass the API documentation, you get some classes and properties. And you need to add them to Hydrus. So we have helper tools to help us do that. And yeah, Hydrus supports authentication. Although I don't think Hydra supports authentication, but Hydrus uses the HTTP authorization header and uses the basic authentication protocol, HTTP authentication protocol, for authorization of users. And yeah, there is the Hydra API documentation is actually implemented as in re-implemented as Python objects whenever you load it into Hydra. Characters that help you write an API documentation using that. This is much more, it's a much more clean way to write it. So how did we store the things? Basically, what we did was we used triples, but we modified it a bit. So basically, we classified triples into different kinds of triples that were there. So if you can see this over here, there is a graph, which is basically where the triples are supposed to be stored. But those graphs are again divided into four types of graphs, subgraphs, you can say. Okay, so this is a graph IAC, graph III, graph CAC, graph IIT. What these basically are is the subject, predicate, and object for a graph keep on changing, right? So it can be like an instance, a property, and a class, right? Or it can be an instance, a property, and an instance. So we tried to differentiate between these basic combinations that were there, and we renamed the properties as instance properties or abstract properties based on whether the predicate was a, sorry, whether the object was a class or an instance. Okay, and we also used something known as terminals. Basically, all the literal values that were there, like float and integer and all those things, we stored them as terminals. And since sometimes there are units associated to the literal values, like suppose 2000 euros or 50 grams or something, so terminals store units as well. Okay, so I'll just go ahead and give, you can set up any API with the Hydrus, and then you can see. So, is it still? Did you guys get all the things, or was it some? Was there some lag or something?
It's quite okay. Like you drop, your voice drops from time to time a little bit, but it's okay. We can understand you.
Okay. Okay. Sure. So yeah, it's just like 10-20 lines of code, right? And this is going to set up a API for using Hydrus, right? So basically, the first thing that Hydrus is supposed to need is an API documentation. So what I have done over here, I've taken one of the API docs that we created. This is basically API documentation for a drone system, right? So basically, a drone is supposed to have a data stream, and the drone is supposed to send data to the main server. It's supposed to have an area of interest, and it's supposed to have a state. This state is supposed to have like the speed of the drone, the fuel capacity, how much battery is left. All these things are there in the drone. So I'll not go into the details of the API documentation, but yeah, I'll just show you how to set up a server using this API documentation. So I put it in a Python dictionary, this API documentation, if you guys can see. It's a doc over here. I named it as a doc. So to set up a Hydrus server, the first thing we need to know is, we need to do is set up the database for the server, right? So since we are using SQL Alchemy as the backend, first create the connection, right? So I'm going to do this. And once I create the connection, I also need to create a session, right? The first thing I need to do is create a connection to a database. So to do that, database over here, SQL Alchemy gives you a way to create a One important thing in any REST API is the server and the right. So you have like http www.hydrus.com/API is we need to define, because Hydrus doesn't actually know what endpoint it is being served at. Since it's a Flask app, you don't actually know what endpoint it's being served at. So I'll just name the entry point as demo API, and I'll give a URL. I'm going to be hosting this in my local system. I'll just give it a local URL. Yeah. Once I created the engine, which is basically the connection to a database, I need to then create a. So now that I've created the connection to the database, I need to create all the models that Hydrus needs. So basically, what I showed you before in this slide, these models, these need to be created into the database that has been connected now. So it's very, you just have to import the database from Hydrus. From data models from Hydrus. So you just do from. Yeah. So once you've imported that, you can just pass this engine to the data models. Yeah. So this basically, when it runs, it'll load this database, it will connect to this database, and then it will create all these models into the database. Now, once I've created the models in the database, I need to start a session so that I can do some operations on this database, right? Yeah, so the session maker gives me a session class, and I need to instantiate an object. So I put another curly bracket over there. Oh, sorry, the bracket over there. Yeah, so now one more thing, like I told you before, the Hydrus actually uses Python implementations of the API documentation. So this is not actually the Hydrus implementation. This is just a Python dictionary. Hydrus needs to use this dictionary to create a HydraDoc object. Basically, Hydrus has some objects to represent the documentation, the classes, collections, and all those things that are there in the documentation. And to do that, we have something known as the doc maker. So I just have to import the doc maker now. Yeah. So now all you need to do is you have to create the API doc. Yeah, so I need to import this dictionary as well over here. So I'll just do this. Now I'll just create the API documentation object using the doc maker. So I'll just do doc maker. Create doc. And here I have to pass the dictionary. And two more things that I need to pass is the server URL and the API name. The reason we have to do this is because if you see the ID of the API documentation object, it actually gives you the URL and the entry point. It uses that, and then it does the slash OCAP thing. So basically, it needs to know what API, what address it is being served at, so that it can modify the API documentation properly. So I'll just pass these two things over here also. Yeah. Now we have created the API doc object. The next thing we need to do is we need to add the metadata. That is, these API doc object has some data, a metadata about the classes and the properties that are being served in this API documentation. Now this metadata has to be added to the models that we created over here, right? So to do that also, Hydrus gives you some methods to do that. So it's basically there's a module called doc parse that you have to use. Once you get doc parse, you just have to get the classes from the parser. So to make it simpler, actually what I did was doc parse was created to use the Python dictionary itself, right? So once you've created this API doc object over here, if you do a dot generate on that API doc object, if you call the generate method, it will return this Python dictionary that is there, right? So you can use this dictionary directly. So you can replace this with just doc over here, and it'll be the same thing. Yeah. So once you get the classes, you just have to pass those classes to the get all properties, and we give you all the properties that are there for each class. Okay. So now that we've got these classes and properties, the next thing we need to do is just add them to this database that we've created. Right. So for that also, DocParse will have some methods for that. Here I'm passing the session that we created to this database. And now I'll insert the properties. Yeah, so now that we've inserted the classes and the properties, now the final thing that we need to do is we need to create an application, as in a the main server that has to run has to be created, right? So Hydrus has another method for that. It is called the App Factory. So you just have to import that. App Factory basically returns a Flask app object which can be run as a server, or it can be given to a server to run. And yeah, so one more thing that you need to specify over here, because we said that our entry point is supposed to be demo API, we have to pass that to the app factory so that it can set up the Flask routes to that entry point. Right. So I'll just pass API. Okay, so now that we just need to start the server, we created all these things. We created the API name, server URL, the API doc, and we created that session, but none of it was given to the app actually, right? So one thing that we implemented was we used app context to add data dynamically to the app, right? So the way app context work is you have to use some utility methods that we created to add these objects and then run the server in a contextual way. So you just have to import those methods. This is to set the API documentation. This one is to set the API name. This one is to set the server URL. And finally, we need one to set the database session. So these four ones are there. You can also, there's also one to specify session or not in your server. But that one I'm not going to use in this demo. So yeah, so just basically set documentation. Set the API name. Server URL, and finally the database session. Now I'll just run the app. Right now, I'm just using the Flask development server, but you need to remember that this is basically a Flask application, and you can use any server that supports Flask to run this also. Right? Yeah, so just let's run the script. Just a minute. Got So this basically syntax is SQL Alchemy, so you'll have to refer to that documentation. Sorry for that. So basically now I have a server running. I'll just show you. Yeah, so if you can see over here, this is a basic Hydra server running, which is serving data in JSON-LD format, right? If you want, you can check out the vocabulary for this server at, you do /vocab, it's the exact same vocabulary that you specified over there, right? One of the entry points. I don't think there's any data in it. We didn't insert any data yet. So there'll be nothing if you actually go there, but we'll still check one thing out. Yeah, so if you see, there's no members for the collection, but the collections is still there, and you can even access the context if you want to find out like what is members and all those things. So you can just do context/my collection. Yeah, so this is the context for that. All these things are like dynamically generated every time you call the function. And yeah, that's pretty much how you set up the API server. I can't actually show you I tried running it with Hydra console, but there was some issue running it on the same system. if I run both the console and the server on the same system, it's not able to recognize the server. So yeah, this was basically the demo that I wanted to show you guys. And there's a much better demo. Used it for the purpose of those drones and the simulation. And
cool. So does this server now also support like you know, like the CRUD operations, or what does it actually support now?
Yeah, it supports all the CRUD operations. You have to specify the operations in the documentation. So any operation that you specify over here, it's possible to do it on the server. We have some tests also going on over there that you can use to verify whether they're running properly or not. So like have this data stream class, it has get, post, delete, and all these things. So if there was a database data stream object over there, curl and do these three operations.
So a post will always result in a new item, or how do you know what a post means?
No. Yeah. So in the, we specified this in the wiki, our design, we basically use post to update items and put to create items.
Awesome. So you use the schema.org action types to determine what the action is supposed to do.
More because of the HydraPy client that we used, because HydraPy could recognize only the schema actions that were there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we gave for the thing, but you can use, you can actually specify the type that you want over there when you're creating the API documentation, and it'll use that one only. So.
Great stuff.
Yeah, thanks. I guess now Akshay will take over and he'll...
Let me post the link to the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can stop sharing your screen now.
Yeah, I'll stop sharing.
Okay, I posted the link for the presentation.
Cool.
Let me share my screen. Okay, can you guys see my screen?
Second. Yes, it's here.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing we wanted to do was to demonstrate how Hydras can be used in some interesting way. So we decided to create this simulation to actually spot anomalies in an area of interest. And so we are using, hold on a sec. The simulation simulates the detection of fire or abnormal heat spots in a given geographical area. The simulation basically consists of three components. One is the central controller, the other is the drone, and the third part is GUI that actually renders everything on the screen. Okay, the first part is central controller. The central controller is basically Hydra's instance with the mechanics layer on the top. All the drones actually submit their data every 15 seconds to the central server, like HTTP, like different kind of logs or the drone object, their location, etc. And the GUI then renders the data from the central server in the browser. Main features. The central server does the following things. First, it stores all the logs and sensor data that from all the different drones. Second, it acts as a charging point for different drones. When drone battery reaches certain level, I guess it was 20%. When the drone's battery is less than 20%, then they will return to the central server for charging. Also, if the user wants to interact with the simulation, he wants to change the direction of drones or something like that, then he can actually send formatted messages to the central server through the GUI. The central server will then parse the message and issue commands to respective drones. Okay, server endpoints. Basically, we have these endpoints at the central server. As you can see, data stream collection. Here, all the drones submit their data stream from their sensors, like temperature detector at a certain location. There are endpoints for different kind of logs, like drone log collections, controller log collection, HTTP IP log collection. These are different logs that are designed to make sense of what's going on in the simulation. We can see all this in the GUI. I'll show you. Okay, the other endpoint is the message collection, where the user will send formatted messages. Then the server will parse and issue commands to different drones to manipulate their actions. The main, the how the central server works is, there is basically a 17 second time loop, which handles two operations basically. First is handle messages, and second is handle anomalies. When a user sends a structured message to the central controller, the central server actually parses the message and find a suitable drone resource where it need to send the command. How it does is, the controller looks for a ID, drone ID in the message. The controller then matches the drone ID with different drones, and when the ID is matched, it will send a command to that particular drone. Okay, the message object. The message is something stored like this in the database, in the central controller database. It's basically a type and a message string. User can send something like this, set drone speed to something, and the central controller will then parse this message and send a command to the drone. The other part is handling anomalies. When any drone detects any anomaly at any position, it will send that anomaly to the central controller. The central controller will then look for the nearest drone and assign the anomaly for confirmation to that drone. Anomaly is something like this. Anomaly has a drone ID, the drone that detected the ID. Status to be confirmed or confirmed depending on what is the status of the anomaly and anomaly ID. Okay, so how it handles the anomaly is, first it gets the anomaly collection from the controller. Then it divides the anomaly in two categories. One is non-confirmed anomalies, second is negative anomalies. For the non-confirmed anomalies, it finds the nearest drone and then assigns the respective anomalies to that particular drone. The other thing is negative anomalies. When the server finds any negative anomalies, it actually deletes that particular anomaly from the database. Okay. The second part is the drone. Drone is basically a Hydra server, and as well as Hydra client. It has two parts: a Hydra instance that acts as a Hydra server, and a mechanics layer with a simulation loop that acts as a Hydra client. Okay. So the drone server also has some endpoints like /drone, where all its set, like, see this. We have a drone object which actually stores everything related to our drone: its position, temperature, battery, direction in which it's going, status, etc. So at /api/drone, we store the drone object itself, and every 15 seconds after the drone object is changed, it will update the drone object at the central controller so that the GUI can parse the drone object and update the UI. The other part is slash data stream, where the sensor data is stored locally on the drone itself. Okay. When we actually initialize the drone, there is a negative ID assigned to the drone. So actually the drone ID is assigned at runtime by the central controller itself. It sends a post request to the central controller. The central controller then returns with the ID of resource created. We then use that ID to update the ID of the drone. And then rest of the communication is continued using that ID itself. That way we can add as many drones as we want to the central server. Okay. So the simulation loop. Basically what we do is we get the drone object from the local host, the drone server. Then we modify the drone object depending upon commands received, the battery amount which needs to be reduced. Then we update the drone object locally, and after it's updated locally, we update the drone object at the central server. Then the GUI parses the data from the central server to update the UI. Some restrictions. Okay, so the drone has some restrictions, like its speed can't be greater than the max speed of the drone. When a user will try to increase its speed greater than the max speed, then the drone will automatically use the max speed. Direction and position. For simplicity, we are using four directions: east, west, north, and south. The drone will only move in the area of interest. If it hits any boundary, then it will change direction. Okay. So basically, drones have different statuses, like active, inactive, charging, confirming, or off. Active is like the normal state in which the drone is. The inactive is like power saving mode. When the drone reaches less than 20%, it actually stops everything it was doing earlier and enters inactive mode. And it has only one task, that is to return to the central server for charging. The drone actually takes 25%, around 25% battery in this state. The third is charging. Here, when the drone will reach the central controller for charging, it will take some time to charge, and then it will continue what it was doing earlier. The other state is confirming. In confirming, so when the central server assigns any anomaly to any particular drone, the drone actually changes its state to confirming. Then it will move toward that anomaly and confirm whether it's true or not. If it's true, then it will mark that position as critical, else it will delete that anomaly from the central server. Okay, battery. So I told this earlier, when we have battery greater than 20%, drone will function normally. Between 4 to 20%, drones enter power saving mode, and then they will return to the central server for charging. If the drone fails to reach the central server before its battery hits less than 4%, then it will automatically shut down. Okay. The third and interesting part is the GUI. So for the GUI, we are using a basic Flask server with GMaps, Bootstrap, and Toaster.js for notifications. Okay, so here you can see on the right side, we have controller logs. Here, all the logs related to the controller are displayed. The second is the drone logs. Here, all the logs related to drones are shown. In data stream related logs. Actually, let me show you. So initially, all drones move in four directions. Then when any drone detects any anomaly, it will send the anomaly to the central controller, and then central controller will assign that anomaly to the nearest drone, as you can see here. the controller assigned the drone that anomaly to drone 2. Okay, the next thing is then the drone will start moving toward that anomaly to confirm whether it's true or not. The next thing is if a negative anomaly is detected, then it will delete it. If it detects any positive anomaly, then it will mark that area as critical. Okay, let me just run the simulation so you can try it yourself. Hold on a sec. Okay, I'm posting the link for the simulation in the IRC channel. So you can actually open the simulation and play with it right now. The most important part is the send message to the controller panel right here. Here the user can send commands like set drone. Let me see the drone ID. Drone 5. Set drone 5 status off. So I sent this command to the central controller. It will take some time. It's actually the 17 second loop. Okay. So the central controller first parses the message, set drone 5 status off. Then it actually issues a command to the drone with ID 5. You can see here the drone 5 executed command and changed its status to off. Now you can see here the drone 5 is actually off. It will stop all its operation and say where it is. You can actually play with the simulation right now. I've posted the link in the IRC channel.
Yeah, looks really cool.
The other thing you can see is all the different servers, all the different Hydrus instances that are being used for this simulation. Let me show. We have 8080. This is the central server. So we can see active drones in drone collection. So as you can see, we have 4 drones here. So this is the drone with ID 8. The drone will actually update this object every 15 seconds so that it can be updated in the GUI. Similarly, we have different drone servers at 8081, 8234, where the other data is stored, drone related data. Say at data stream. The current data stream that is being analyzed by its servers is being stored. It's something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
One question I have is, like, how often do the drones or the server check the API documentation. Like, in other words, if you would change the API, like if you would use different URLs, would they automatically figure out how to adapt, or would they stop and you would need to restart?
The API documentation is actually set during the initialization of the server. So
I see. Okay.
I don't think you can change it during the runtime of the server.
But I guess it would be relatively straightforward to do that, right?
Actually, all these drones and the central server don't know the endpoints, any of the endpoints. It just knows the basic URL to the central controller and different drones, like till slash API, okay? And the vocab path. It only knows the vocab location for each server.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial endpoint for the server. It figures out the rest automatically using Hydra PY client.
Right. So what I meant is, if the drone or the server sends a comment and it fails, it could refetch the API documentation to see if it changed, for instance, and then adapt automatically, right?
Yeah, the client does that automatically.
Cool. This is really great stuff. Do you guys plan to write a blog post or something about this?
We actually did.
We wrote a blog post for it. I'll put the link on the IRC.
Oh, you did already? Fantastic. We should share that
a bit more
broadly. Pavlik, I see you on the queue.
I posted that on the IRC.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, I have two questions. But first of all, really nice demo. Thank you for all the work you've done on that and sharing here during the conference with us. Do you consider having some kind of live public demo deployed, I don't know, whatever server you have, or even on Heroku free account or something, that people from the community group could just go and check as you shown the responses from the API and so on? I think it's a little easier than everyone needs to get the repo and get the Python kind of server running. Do you consider having this kind of public demo somewhere at some point?
Actually, we did set up a AWS server to run this in the starting when we were doing it, but we didn't actually push the final because Hydrus is supposed to be generic, so we don't actually know what it's supposed to serve until someone provides an API documentation.
Yeah,
I talk about this demo of this Hydra Flog demo. If you would have what you show now in the second part of the presentation somewhere as a public demo, I think it would be easier for people just to go and check out how it looks and you know, all the responses from the API.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah,
I think that would be awesome. And the second question would be, all those endpoints, I understand clients discovered from the entry point, and you have Hydra links for the collections, or how clients get all those endpoints you discussed?
The client actually used the vocab that Chris showed you earlier, the API documentation. It parses that API documentation, plus every endpoint has a collection, a context. Let me show you.
Excuse me for the noise. So you have a Hydra link instances? Or the anomaly, it's a Hydra link? I don't see... Yeah.
Hold on a sec. So...
Public, can you repeat your question in the meantime? I kind of missed it and I'm scribing.
Oh, if those in the entry points, I understand those anomaly drone, these are instances of Hydra link. Or I'm mistaken.
Maybe you meant data stream, not link. The drones sent back to the central server a data stream that is actually a stream of messages.
I guess what he's asking is how the client actually discovers the different endpoints, right?
Yes, that's correct. And it seems like the entry point has instances of Hydra link.
So at the entry point, we have a context, like you can see, okay, let me just open this. So at this context, we have different location to the vocab, to the main vocab, to the server, like you can see it here, and different we have different semantic relations. Yeah, maybe translate.
Could you show quickly the vocab definition of the of those anomaly and so on?
Sorry, what? Can you repeat the question?
Display the vocabulary, Chris, or Akshay. Display okay, the full vocabulary.
Okay, okay. Can you see the vocab?
Yes.
Okay,
I mean,
so
maybe what is missing, you mean the link in the header? I mean, you were looking for the link in the header, the link to the vocabulary in the header of the request you were talking about.
There is a link to the vocab in the header.
Okay. No, I was talking if those kind of links to collections, the properties in the entry point are defined as instances of Hydra link, a class Hydra link. For example, if you have the property, I think you had anomaly with capital A.
Yeah.
But it was like a link to collection. It was used as a link to collection of anomalies, I understood. Or the count.
Mm-hmm. So we have let's take the anomaly collection. We basically have two classes in the vocab. One is the anomaly and second is the anomaly collection. The anomaly collection,
how you link the entry point to anomaly collection, how you relate those
there
two?
Is actually another entry there is an entry point class in the hold on a sec, let me show you. There is an entry point class in the vocab itself, which links to the different endpoints. Okay. Entry point. So you can see here in entry point class, we have a supported properties list where we actually define the different endpoints.
Yeah, that's like a type. I see. It's at type Hydra link. So that was my question. These are instances of Hydra link. Okay.
Okay, and is it the right way of doing this?
Yeah, I think that's how currently spec works. We currently discuss some other possibilities of discovering collections that have entities of particular type, but that's, I think, as for current spec, that's like the only way I think possible at this moment.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you for the answer.
Well, yeah, it's a great job. Really, really proud. Congratulations. I mean, I really like also the presentation, so great. I hope that actually, yeah. The other guys are as happy as me about this thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's awesome work. Make sure to share it a bit more broadly. So if you can, like, I will tweet the link to the blog post and also add it to the Hydra homepage. And if you have anything else that we can share, just let me or let me know, or actually send it to the mailing list so that people can have a look.
I'll modify the server a bit. So we are using SQL Alchemy right now. So SQL Lite right now. So it can't store many. It can't store a lot of logs. So I need to change the database side to PostgreSQL to support huge amount of log. If you want to keep the simulation running, that it will have to support a large quantity of logs. Then I'll update that.
Yeah, it would be great if we have a demo running somewhere so that people can play with it without having to set up
anything. I'll do that.
Like said.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, if it's easier for you, you can also just delete the data after a day or something. Like, I don't think we need to keep history if it makes it easier for you.
Okay, I'll see what works best.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else?
So the other thing we had on our agenda was follow up on action items. Tomasz had one, but he's not here today, and Pavlik had two of them. So Pavlik, do you have anything, any update regarding the action items? Otherwise, we can postpone that for to the next telecon because we are basically out of time anyway.
Yeah, I made a small pull request, just adding two additional collections to the use cases. It was just changing the entry point. I don't know, I mentioned later, after a few days, you and Carol to check this out. I haven't seen reply on GitHub. I made the first part just a pull request of adding people and places, so venues and people to the entry point as two collections.
Are you okay?
I can post a link 1 second.
Yeah, that completely slipped my radar. I was traveling last week, so sorry about that.
And after that, I would like to add, for example, from the place, there could be a collection with list of all the events that happen in that place, which would be the use case kind of for the adding existing members to collections. But at first, I want to see if everyone agrees on adding those two collections, and then I'll make a separate pull request with actually some narrative for the use case and some example of the issue in the adding existing members.
Cool. Okay, great. I mean, I will review the pull request. Sorry for not having seen it so far.
No worries. We can, over next 2 weeks, discuss it on GitHub. And if we agree on this one, I will make the second one afterwards for following up on this one.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you guys would like to discuss today? Or any questions, comments?
Yeah, I had a question actually. Like I said before, for the authorization and authentication part that Hydrus had, we actually used the HTTP headers, the authorization header in the HTTP request to directly use the authentication part of it. But is there some way to support like authorization or authentication in REST APIs using Hydra?
So using the HTTP authorization header is perfectly fine. I mean, that's like according to standard. But Hydra at the moment doesn't have any way to like describe authorization in a more fine-grained manner. We may work on that in the future, but at the moment there is no work going on that. Was that like the main issue you ran into?
Yeah, because we wanted an API that was, you know, secure for people to run it, but we couldn't figure out how to use Hydra with it, so we had to use the HTTP version of it. But that's not actually secure unless you use an SSL connection or something.
That's true, yeah. Or HTTP digest would be a bit more secure, but you're right.
Yeah, that was the only thing that I had.
Anything else? If not,
no, nothing for me.
thanks a lot again for the awesome demo. I will share this stuff right after the meeting. And have a nice day.
You too. Yeah, thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks.